The Inside Transportation Podcast is sponsored by Ford Motor Company. Built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress from connectivity to autonomy, AI to machine learning, Ford has one simple goal: to improve mobility for its customers. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their corporate efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com. The Inside Transportation Podcast is also sponsored by Fenwick & West. Fenwick & West is one of the world's first and leading law firms dedicated to technology and transportation. Learn more about how Fenwick can help companies tackle the complex legal and business issues of autonomous transportation at fenwick.com. That's F-E-N-W-I-C-K.com. Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Inside Transportation Podcast, a production of Inside.com. This is our weekly podcast where we discuss transportation trends that you need to know about to stay ahead of the curve. My name is Johan Marino, and I am the writer of the Inside Transportation and Inside Electric Vehicles newsletters, and I am joined here by my co-host, angel investor, podcaster, the man who once drew more than 6,700 people in the parking lot of the Richmond, California Walmart. You might have to fact check that. El Presidente of Inside.com, Jason Calcanis.
All right, it's good to be here. It's good to be here, Johan. We had a great last podcast with Sonny from Ford. That was big, getting a Ford executive on the pod.
That was a great interview. Yeah, he's really insightful, and I'm excited to have him on. I think we're going to have him on again in July, so I'm very excited for that.
He was honest.
And anything new in your world?
Well, I'm losing my mind under COVID, but I did in fact upgrade my Model 3 to the Model Y.
Whoa!
And they instantly told me I would get delivery by the end of June, first week in July. So they are now. I'm in California and I'm in the Bay Area by the Fremont factory. Mm-hmm. So I have a feeling people who are close to the factory, given the COVID situation and how hard it is to ship vehicles, I think you get a little bit of a benefit because you're local.
Right.
But yeah, I was super excited about that. I got white interior, white exterior, and I got the long range.
Bold choice. White on white?
I've never owned a white car. I thought I'd give it a shot. It looks really good in white. And I watched some YouTube videos. And, you know, as always is the case when new cars are coming out, there are some production, challenges
or
problems.
We will talk about that today. That is on the docket today.
Is it on the docket? Okay, great. Perfect.
Yes, it's on the docket.
Oh, I see that. Yeah, yes, it is. Okay, good. So I have some inside information on that.
Great. But before we get to that, I'm sure everybody's on the edge of their seats now. But we're going to talk a little bit about self-driving cars. To date, the U.S. government has been very hands-off when it comes to automakers and technology companies developing automated driving software. But this has also led to questions on whether the government is doing enough to spur innovation and create a sustainable path to autonomy. For instance, some lawmakers and analysts have been concerned there are no federal technical standards or sharing of vehicle testing data in a standardized system. But the bigger problem is that U.S. consumers are also very apprehensive about self-driving technology, which will probably lead to opposition if and when companies start to use it. In response to this, last week, 8 states and 9 auto and technology companies joined together with the help of the U.S. Department of Transportation to start a self-driving vehicle initiative called AV Test. This is a completely voluntary program where states and companies will share autonomous vehicle testing data in an online portal. There's also going to be, a part of the program where people in the areas where self-driving vehicles are being tested can see, you know, where exactly, what companies are involved, and so forth. There's sign-off from Fiat Chrysler, Cruise Automation, Nuro, Toyota, Uber, Waymo, a bunch of the big players in the autonomous space. But Jason, my question to you is, what do you think is the best path forward for us to get to autonomous vehicles on the road today? Do we take like a centralized route where the government works with autonomous developers to set guidelines? Or do you think we should continue with this decentralized, hands-off approach.
All right. So this speaks to a wider issue, which is our political system is unique in the world because we have 50 states that act right. like their own little countries, and we have a federal government, right? And we live in a democracy, and we have a lot of nuances to that democracy. And so if you were to just look at any other issue, whether it's education or even policing, which is in the news, mm-hmm. and obviously our reaction to the pandemic, you can see where our system helps and where our system is a hindrance. One of the things that's really great is that different states can make their own rules for, you know, how they think about the Second Amendment, right? And gun ownership. And, you know, some states you can apparently carry a gun with you anywhere, even into federal buildings with 20 of your friends. Don't want to live in that state, I don't think. But other states, it's incredibly hard to have a handgun, as an example, in New York City. So
right.
This is a strength and a weakness. And so it lets us try different things in different cities. So you did see that in the early days of autonomy where, you know, different cities would be more aggressive in competing with other ones to have Uber or Cruise or whoever's business. So,
right. And I think the Bay Area was one of those areas, right, that were very supportive of self-driving vehicle initiatives.
You would think that, you know, and then you, it's not even areas. You look at the Bay Area, people refer to San Francisco and the Bay Area. It's one of the most dysfunctional systems ever because you have 100 little different pockets, like, you know, Palo Alto, San Mateo, San Francisco proper, Napa. I mean, everything is just Oakland, Berkeley, everything's run totally different.
And they're all different counties, right?
Because exactly.
That's
and they
the
don't,
whole debacle about the Tesla, you know, production facility was that that specific county was saying no.
When Fremont was saying no, exactly. Yeah. So these right. things, you know, are problematic in that regard. And really, I mean, this is the automotive industry responding to that and saying, hey, normally it's great that we have this vibrancy and this, you know, distributed system where people can think slightly differently. I mean, we all should have some common things that we believe, but we can be a little bit autonomous in our governance, but not too autonomous. We saw that with speed limits too, right? Like we're like, listen, you can have a speed limit, but or you can have a different drinking age, but you're not going to get federal money, right? So the federal government can use that as a way to coerce people into thinking like, you know, as one. So what this all means is other countries that think as one and are top down, like say China, will be able to do things in self-driving that we're not going to do. So they will be able to use their unilateral approach to governance in a much more deft way than we will. So we'll fall behind a little right. bit on the margins, but then you'll have vibrancy like this where, you know, Chicago and Michigan, I'm sorry, California, Michigan, some places might say, you know what? We have car companies. We want to be supportive of them. You know, they support us to get into office, or Texas might just be a very free state and have a lot of space. And so this seems yeah. like a healthy back and forth, right? And it will help for sure. But one of the things I think is, and you mentioned this, is that people are scared of autonomous cars. I think that we're going to hit a tipping point in the coming years when enough people have self-driving on their Tesla specifically, and they know people who have it or they've used it. And when you use it, it's impossible to not have it. So my Model 3 was in the shop. I was having problems with it, which we can get into if you want. But I was having problems with my early Model 3, which was like a founder series, like the ones that come out before the production ones. And I started driving my old Roadster again, which doesn't have self-driving, doesn't even have power steering, to be honest. And it was infuriating for me because I didn't feel like I could change the station on my phone, as an example. I had to be hyper-vigilant in stop-and-go traffic. And when you have the self-driving, it really is, and you know how to use it, it's a really big difference. It's a tremendous security blanket. It's like having anti-lock brakes or a seatbelt. It's just one of these safety things where you know if you're going out of the lane, it shakes, right? And it gives you a right. little warning that you're leaving the lane. And other cars have this. It's very hard to go backwards when this thing has been keeping
the lane.
I mean,
I feel the same way about blind spot monitoring because my car has it. And when I drive a rental or another car that doesn't have blind spot monitoring, yeah. it's like I forgot to drive. I don't know how to turn my shoulder or I don't know how to turn
exactly.
my head over my shoulder anymore.
Exactly.
Right? But I think what's interesting about self-driving vehicles in particular is that in order for these vehicles to be very sustainable and for the vision of space, right? When we're talking about steering wheels and we're talking about mirrors, we're not going to need those anymore. Obviously, right now, federally, there are rules that mandate automakers have to make cars with steering wheels with all the bells and whistles, right? Regardless if they're being used or not. And where I see some conflicts between a federal legislation and like a state legislation, for example, would be that what if California says, okay, yeah, you can go ahead, have a vehicle without any of these components. And then on the federal level, down the road, it's like, wait, we actually want the vehicles to still have, you know, all these components, right? And that might stifle some innovation. Like you said, a country like China that might have a more centralized focus on autonomy. And I know their big focus is just being a global leader in like autonomous vehicles, electric vehicles, all these different, you know, future transportation modes. And, you know, some U.S. lawmakers have actually expressed concerns about like the U.S. falling behind in that aspect, right? Because of the lack of legislations. But what you were kind of saying is that I saw a poll from Partners for Automated Vehicle Education, and this was published in May. But nearly 3 in 4 Americans said self-driving vehicle technology is not ready for prime time.
Yeah.
So I guess my question to you is, how do we get people to trust the future of transportation? Because it's not a matter of if this, you know, technology is out there. It's a matter of when. And do you think some of it is that people are afraid they're going to lose their jobs?
I don't think it's the job thing. That's an interesting wrinkle in all of this, but it's not job related. What it is the media, which we are part of, really likes to report on a Tesla with autonomy getting in an accident, right? Like that, or a Tesla or electric car goes on fire, right? That's because it's new technology. And we see this with all new technology. When the internet came out, when video games came out, people were up in arms that video games were going to destroy the generation, that, you know, the internet was going to destroy this generation. You get the idea. It's always scary, this new technology. And then the media gets a lot of views and they get a lot of clicks and they get a lot of people tuning into the nightly news if an electric car goes on fire or a self-driving car gets in an accident. What they don't see is all the accidents that Teslas on autopilot don't get into, right? They don't see that. So it's just there's just this weird phenomenon whenever a new technology comes out where people get super enthusiastic about it, then people are scared about it, and then eventually it becomes obvious and ubiquitous and boring. The idea that, like, you know, you can turn on Netflix and stream a series versus in the 80s and 90s when you had to take out a VHS tape, set a tape, you know, record it, and then you had a physical tape, and you get the idea. It was, and you just couldn't watch last season. Maybe over the summer they would rebroadcast it. Things just change very quickly, and then we get used to them. So that's what will happen with self-driving, is everybody will know somebody with a self-driving car. Everybody will be in one. Everybody will have driven one. This is why I think it's, I like Tesla's approach to incrementally giving more and more features in the self-driving package to users. Like, now it can do stop signs like we talked about, I don't know, 4 or 5 episodes ago. So I like that. Right. Other people think we should just keep this, you know, in development until it's flawless and it goes, you know, level 4 point to point. That's kind of silly. I think people should start using it and they will get comfortable with it. And it's really, well, like you said, for your blind spot, imagine not having a rearview mirror. When I drove the Roadster this past week, I drove it 3 or 4 times back and forth from the studio, I didn't have a rear facing camera. You know, I'm in here in this classic car, and I'm like, oh my God, how do I know right. if there's a dog behind the car?
Because that Roadster doesn't even have, it doesn't even have like a screen, right?
No screen.
If I recall correctly.
It's got a JVC CD player that sometimes the Bluetooth connects to my iPhone and most of the time it doesn't. But like, just think, it doesn't even have sensors that you're going to hit the carbon fiber, you know, when you're parking it. Or if you're going to run over your dog when you put it in reverse. So, you know, we've come a long way. And I think once people start having this, because, you know, I was looking at the Jeep, what is it, Gladiator? What's the one that has the flatbed?
Yeah, the Gladiator.
I was looking
yeah.
at the Jeep Gladiator, or I was coveting the new Defender, Range Rover Defender. And then I just said, you know what? I can't drive an ICE engine without self-driving, without software updates. And I'm just going to get the Y with the all-wheel drive, dual motor, and get snow tires for when I'm, you know, in snow. And
And boom, you got the Y.
And I just got the Y. I was like, screw it. I mean, I think this is what people underestimate about Tesla's lock-in. I looked at the Corvette C7, I looked at the Jeep, and I looked at the Defender, and I had all these fantasies about driving those cars. And I was like, I don't want to go through the pain of those cars. I just don't want the pain of those cars.
You don't want the pain of having to go to a gas station.
Yeah, I actually did think about that as well. Of like, oh my God. Okay. I mean, if I have to go to the gas station 25 times a year for 10 minutes each, like that's 200, it's 4 hours of my life at gas stations. Sorry, F that. Beep. Beep that out at 15 minutes in. Sorry about that. Just F that.
I will say, though, just heading back into the topic of autonomy before we move on to talk about the Model Y, I think the big, change factor here for Americans to embrace autonomy will be if Amazon buys Zoox, which is that self-driving company that they've been rumored to acquire.
That's the one that's been for sale forever and they can't raise money.
Yes. But apparently they found a buyer in Amazon. We still haven't heard if the deal's closed yet. But if they do buy Zoox, and I know that they're trying to build they already ordered, right? Amazon ordered Rivian-built trucks, like delivery trucks, all electric. If we see Amazon use a self-driven car with a human on board doing deliveries, I think that's going to expose people to autonomy,
sure.
to trust it
Fantastic.
Enough because they're going to see it in their neighborhood every day.
Yep.
But the key is not getting rid of that human entirely, because when someone sees a human being transported in a self-driving car day to day, do all these deliveries, and they see that nothing really happens to them and it's, you know, a safe method of transport, I think it's going to work. I think people are going to feel very comfortable and safe with autonomy. And obviously, I think it's going to be led by younger generations as well, who are going to be more open to using newer technologies like self-driving.
100%. Yeah, I mean, the more people see it, the safer they'll feel about it. And then also think about if you had a fleet. For people with fleets, how great would it be to know that they are going to get a warning? Let's just forget about they can go in the back and sort the packages while they're driving to the next destination. Just the fact that you'll get in less fender benders, you'll leave the lane less often, and you'll get in less accidents. Just that reason alone is enough for Bezos to be in this, because he's got so many people on the road. And then those drivers mm-hmm. are known for driving aggressively because they're trying to make time, right? And
right.
so...
yeah.
In order to counter that, having self-driving means they're going to drive consistently, right? So I put self-driving 10 years out without a driver. I still think it's at plus 10 years, like 2030. I know that the technology is almost ready. Like it's 80. I think it's 70% there. Other people think it's 80, 90. I think it's 70. I just like the idea of more people getting behind the wheel and testing it, because then you believe.
Yes, yes. And before further ado, we're going to take a quick break here on the Inside Transportation Podcast. When we come back, the Model Y is here and there are a few problems. And we're going to discuss those problems when we come back on the Inside Transportation Podcast. Stay tuned.
Hey, everybody. I just want to let you know that this episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by our friends at the Ford Motor Company. Built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress from connectivity to autonomy, Ford has one simple goal, and that's to improve the mobility of its customers. Ford has been using technology to shape the future of transportation for over 100 years and is dedicated to solving the world's most pressing mobility issues. What you might not know is that Ford has a series of divisions that make these visions a reality. Ford X is Ford's venture incubator that unites entrepreneurs, designers, and engineers to shape the future of transportation. Ford's City Innovations team brings innovative ideas to life through community workshops, crowdsourcing initiatives, and citywide mobility challenges. And Spin, a property of Ford, brings e-scooter sharing to cities and college campuses. So here's your call to action. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com. Thanks again to Ford for sponsoring independent media like this podcast.
Welcome back to the Inside Transportation Podcast. Johan Reno and Jason Calcanis talking about the week's latest updates in the transportation world. It's an exciting time for many of our listeners as they may have received notification that it's time to receive their Model Y. But some of those buyers are experiencing issues. Tesla forums, including the Tesla Motor subreddit on Reddit, Tesla Motor Clubs, one of my favorite message boards related to Tesla, and other Tesla-supporting blogs like Electric and Inside EVs have documented various issues that new owners have received with their Model Ys. So paint and trim issues have been noted, problems with the vehicle's motorized hatch, improper rear seat alignments, and the back seats not being attached properly. It's pretty crazy. As we all know, Tesla fast-tracked production of the Model Y. Previously, deliveries were expected in fall 2020, but you know, everything was pushed ahead, and many people are happy, but some people are kind of frustrated over these issues. Elon Musk wrote in a leaked email published last week that the automaker faces challenges ramping up Model Y production, as is always the case with new products. But Jason, my question to you is, do you think these quality issues are going to impact sales? Do you see weakened demand for the Model Y? As these issues are reported, do you think people are just going to want to wait it out until the quality is better on the Model Y?
Yeah.
And, you know, some of your personal thoughts, a new Model Y buyer.
Well, it's interesting. I ordered it and then I watched some of the videos and I saw it's the panel gap issue again popping up, which they seem to have solved with the other cars, but it popped back up with the Model Y. I'm not sure why that one is such a persistent issue, because that's just the person putting on the panels correctly and tightening them, which I think can be solved by.
And it's funny because I think Sandy told us that the panel gaps were improving.
Yes. Right? So this seems to me like a speed error. I also have a theory about it, which is, you know, they're getting the factories back up and running and they have to convince everybody to come back to work. And I think you've read that people are, you know, people are obviously scared to go back to work and they don't have to go back to work. And unemployment is such that I think in some cases, people are getting paid more to stay home or, you know, 80, 90% because there's all these other incentives the government is giving you during the pandemic, which is great. So maybe there are just people getting back to work in the factory. Maybe they're just not as, you know, on top of their game. But I emailed a video of the person who had pointed out, I think, three issues: the panel gaps, the closing of the hatch, and they actually had fingerprints on something, which is like a silly one that's easy to fix.
Oh, okay. I think I saw that.
Yeah, they had some fingerprints on like the roof or whatever, which is just somebody was rushing and didn't wear gloves, which obviously you, when you're working on a new car, you wear gloves. So I sent it to the person who was finishing up my trade and all that from Tesla, and I said, hey, should I wait 2 weeks or whatever? And he said, absolutely not. We've got it resolved. It's just a, you know, new product. And we will go over and inspect all of these with you on delivery. And you don't have to accept delivery if there's any issues, or we'll fix it immediately if we spot any. So I just was decided to preemptively say, hey, I'm aware of these issues. You know, and I told my assistant, who will probably receive delivery for me, hey, just check everything. and make sure that these three or four issues are we specifically checked. And the hatchback issue was peculiar because it turned out, you know, they have that really deep extra double trunk.
Yes.
The automatic closing hatchback seems to be hitting a strap there, maybe. But then the person said they moved that strap.
That's what I saw.
And it still happened. So I'm not sure what that issue is. It could be alignment or, you know, whatever. But I think these are minor issues. Like, the car drives itself. The car goes 300 miles on batteries. Like, I think the expectation of Tesla is that the car is so transcendent and perfect that it's going to fly and there's never going to be a flaw in it. The fact that, like, we're talking about cosmetic problems that are easily solved, to me, makes this a bit of a non-story, right? And they really stand behind their
products. But it's Tesla, so it's a story.
Well, I mean, this is, I mean, it's also like Apple. You know, Apple releases a new product and they take, you know, the headphone jack out and it's like, you know, it's going to be a 6-month discussion on Twitter and Reddit and social media and, you know, meme warfare about the phone jack coming out. It's like, yep, they took the phone jack out.
But if you know, Google switched from micro USB to USB-C,
yeah, people are like, whatever.
It's kind of a non-conversation. People just accept it. And, you know, look, the thing is, do you remember getting that first iPhone?
Of course.
Right? I don't know if you were an early adapter.
Yeah, or, think.
Early adopter of the iPhone. It had so many problems.
Yeah, it didn't even have an app store, then crashed like crazy. It took 10 minutes to boot up. I mean, it was garbage, but it was amazing, right?
Yeah, the Wi-Fi on my iPhone never worked.
Yeah, I remember that. One. Yeah, that was like...
But that's just what comes with being an early adopter. You know, your product's going to suck for a little bit, then you get the... But you get the advantage of having it first. And ultimately, I think the Model Y is going to be the most successful American-made vehicle ever sold.
Wow.
It's going to become the new Camry.
What do you base that on, the new cost? RAV4. The value?
The value. And first of all, you know, look, I think eventually Tesla's going to get rid of the Model 3, in the U.S. at least. It makes no sense to have two virtually identical vehicles sold in the same lineup. Mm. I mean, in terms, because you actually had a first-hand view, and I've had, you know, a first-hand view at the Model Y as well, but wouldn't you say that both vehicles, you know, they're kind of the same?
Yes, and the Model Y, it's almost like they made, like, two iPhones 1 year apart, but they just, everything they learned making the other one, they just fixed. And so it is the same car, except there's so much more room in it. And as we heard from Monroe on this podcast, they figured out a lot of things about the electronics, the HVAC system, and that they perfected. Let's face it, they've perfected a lot. And to make him a believer is hard, right? He's a curmudgeon. You know, like he's taking the stand. I think Sandy's taking the stance like, show me, I don't believe you, right? And you heard him on the podcast. I mean, he was just in awe of certain parts of the Model Y. So that's an interesting one. Deprecate the Model 3 and go to the Y. I don't know anybody who would buy a Model 3 if the Y was available, because the Y is going to be much better. And why would the case be to take a Model 3? Maybe the Model 3 goes down to, unless the Model 3, they knock 10K off of it or something, what would be the point?
Which might be, I mean, that might happen with the new batteries, right?
Yeah, that's coming up, the battery things in September.
But also you're seeing a lot of companies like Ford and GM kind of moving away from making sedans, which is why I'm thinking that eventually they're just going to say, let's just focus on Model Y, because consumer trends in the U.S. at least, and by the way, we're just talking about the U.S. now. I think the Model 3 is going to remain in China and other countries where smaller vehicles are still selling very well. But in the U.S., consumer trends are gravitating or have gravitated to pickup trucks and SUVs, right? So I think what we're going to see is that it's going to become like the new RAV4. We're going to see soccer moms have them. But obviously right now, it's going to take a little time, I think, to push out the Model Y because of the pandemic. Most consumers are probably worried that they're going to lose their jobs, and it's not the best time to buy a car. But these problems will ultimately get ironed out. I mean, they happen with every car, not just Teslas, which is why I wanted to discuss this, because I feel like you said earlier, I mean, there is always a microscope on Tesla, but I know, you know, new Honda models, new Toyota models, new Subaru models, you know, whatever automaker you can think of. If it's a first-year model, there's always going to be problems, guaranteed. Yeah. And usually they're fixed.
I mean, a good way to look at this is the resale value of cars, right? And are people loyal to the brands ultimately? And as I explained earlier in the first part of the segment about self-driving, like, I am supremely loyal to Teslas because overall, I can't find anything that comes close. So if there, like literally, mm-hmm. if there's a gap on the hood and a couple of aesthetic things, or they have to fix the trunk latch, if mine comes with a, you know, a trunk latch that doesn't work half the time, I'll just get that fixed. And I'm not really worried about it. What I'm worried about is like not having self-driving and getting into a fender bender, right? While I'm stuck in traffic or something. So anyway, I'm really getting excited. You know, that new car excitement. I don't know if you get that new car excitement.
Yes. No,
I'm kind of getting it now. Kind of getting that new car excitement.
Man.
And they actually put USB-C chargers in now. And I bought an
I
bought an aftermarket for that front section where they have the phone chargers. Presh, who works for me, one of my associates at my venture firm, he bought me, I think it was on his 1 year anniversary for the company. He bought me a gift. I was like, wow, this is a great employee. Johan, I'm not saying you should be buying me gifts, but
it's only been
okay. Yeah.
Years,
so I'll be waiting on the 5 year anniversary.
I owe you.
You should
gifts.
Just get me a gold watch on your 10th anniversary. But anyway, I was like stunned that he did that. It was very kind, but he bought me that mat that you could buy the aftermarket one to do charging in the Model 3.
Yes. The wireless.
But in Model Y, it's built in from what I understand. They built in the wireless.
Yes.
So that's kind of cool.
The wireless charging pad is built in, and the two USB, they used to be regular USB drives, but now they're USB.
And I think they're higher,
which is,
I think they're
cool.
Higher voltage.
Yeah. They charge a little bit faster.
The old ones were slow.
And you could actually, if you have, I think you might have a Chromebook or like a MacBook, you should actually be able to charge your laptop via those drives. I don't know how much power it's going to draw.
So it might be like a top off kind of thing.
Look into that. Yeah, but you can absolutely charge your laptop.
They should make it a 60-watt USB-C, whatever the max is. Is it 60-watt or something? Whatever the max is, because you've got a giant battery on the floorboard. Like, it should be the highest power USB-C port.
Well, that's the promise, right? Because the promise of the million-mile battery and all these innovations that are coming in the EV space is vehicle-to-grid. Right. So vehicle to grid technology, being able to do peer to peer charging as well, which I think Elon has actually signaled that they would be experimenting with it. So doing like peer to peer charging, but ultimately using your car battery as like a outlet, like a giant outlet. We're going to see that.
An inverter or something like that. Is that what they call it? Because the Cybertruck supposedly has that inverter or whatever it is. So you can plug in, you know, some high powered whatever when you go to a work site.
Oh yeah. Yeah, most pickup trucks include that. So, you know, it's going to be in the Cybertruck, but we're also going to see it in all of Tesla's.
Like a 110, you just plug something in, like.
Yeah, either through an adapter. Mm. It's probably going to be an adapter, but I wouldn't be surprised if they start including it in like the Model
the
Y.
The peer-to-peer thing would be a really cool unlock, because I have been in situations where I've driven somewhere and somebody else got a Tesla, and it's not like you can jump a Tesla and you're like, damn, I need some more, you know, charge. And it'd be very cool if you just, you know, plug into Teslas and go to the touchscreen and say, give this Tesla 10% charge, you know? That would be super cool.
Oh yeah, it's going to happen. But I'm putting my prediction in. I think it's going to happen by end of year. And the reason why is because Rivian is going to, that's going to be one of their key selling points.
Finally, right? They have a competitor, right? That actually is doing.
Right. So they're going to be driving them to do more of these innovations that seem very niche, right? I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, I don't even think peer-to-peer charging with Teslas is like a feature that's widely.
It'll be used by 1% of people, 1% of the time. It's literally on the XY chart of importance. It's the bottom left.
Right. Same with using like an outlet inside your car. I mean, unless you're hooking in a blender.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if you're
to make a morning shake in
if you're tailgating, right, and you're at like Giant Stadium and you want to make margaritas, yes. I almost waited for the 7-seater because I have the 7-seater on my Model S, but I was like, you know what? My girls are now 4 and they're going to be too big to be back there and screw it up. I don't want to wait. But I have the jump seats.
So that's expected to, Yeah, that's expected to come out quarter four.
Yeah, I think Elon tweeted that
this
right.
year.
Yeah.
He just tweeted.
Anyway, I'll let everybody know anyway, how amazing it is. I drove one of the early prototypes, and it was awesome. I mean, it's got the big glass roof like the Model X, and you know, like those beautiful roofs, and then you can press a button and have the back seats go down, which is really convenient when you're shipping stuff.
And
it just feels so much roomier inside. It feels giant inside. Where the Model 3 just feels...
Do you
think
you could camp there as a solo like camper?
You could. On the two Model people y? Could... Yeah, 2 5- to 6-foot people could lay side by side in the back, for sure. Yeah, like a couple could sleep in the back and then keep the back open, for sure. 100%.
Awesome, awesome. Well, we're going to take a quick break here on Inside Transportation. When we come back, Uber's become a SaaS company. We'll talk about that when we come back on the Inside Transportation podcast. Stay tuned.
Hey, everybody. Let me take a moment to thank Fenwick and West. They're one of the world's first and leading law firms dedicated to technology and life sciences. They operate in the fast lane of innovation where ideas often outpace changes in the law. That's where you find Fenwick's autonomous transportation and shared mobility practice, steering startups, technology giants, and major automotive companies through rapidly evolving legal, business, and regulatory challenges, which we talk about here on Inside Transportation all the time. A Silicon Valley original, Fenwick is a national law firm with offices in Mountain View, San Francisco, Seattle, New York, Santa Monica, and even Shanghai. So here's your call to action. Learn more about how Fenwick can help companies tackle the complex legal and business issues of autonomous transportation at fenwick.com. That's FENWICK.com. Thanks again to Fenwick for providing great legal services to me. I use them personally for our investments and for supporting independent media like Inside Transportation. Let's get back to this amazing episode.
And we're back on Inside Transportation. Now time to talk about one of our favorite industries besides the transportation industry, that is, the SaaS space, software as a service. Jason's very familiar with this service because he has you've made a few investments in the SaaS space.
If you are using modern day software, you don't have to buy CD-ROMs and install software on your local computer. It's all in a web browser. It's in the cloud, and you pay by subscription. Right?
Yes. So
even for Adobe products now, like Photoshop and all that stuff, you pay $20 a month or something. It's still downloadable, but I think you pay $25 a month for the Adobe Creative Cloud.
It is
like,
kind of crazy.
That was a big
how,
change in 2014. Yeah.
It's crazy how nobody owns any media anymore or like software.
Yes.
Like you don't own
Remember
it.
Remember CD-ROM cases?
Yes. CD collections and, you know, all this stuff. I mean, no one's ever going to own it.
VHS tapes.
It's all on Spotify. It's all on Netflix. It's all over the place. But
it's the jukebox in the cloud. It's so much better.
Right.
Like who, I mean, you imagine how much of our lives, this shows you like we had all this free time. We used to like sit there and catalog our CDs.
I remember that.
You know, where we would take them out and put them into sleeves and we get like CD organizers and...
But don't you kind of like miss those
days? Why did we waste all that time?
Don't you miss those days? Like,
no,
not at
all.
Aren't you nostalgic for reading?
Not at all. I want to reclaim that time. I want to
liner notes.
You know, it's interesting. It lets you by releasing that time, it lets your fandom go a little bit more wild in other places. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that you can recapture that time and then either consume more media or go deeper into the media you like. The one thing I don't like is I used to like on DVDs, the alternate tracks.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So like the director commentary, all that stuff. And it doesn't feel like that exists. Where does that exist anymore?
I would say YouTube, you know? Maybe. Like I know I've seen some additional commentary on YouTube, but I also think like podcasts, right? Because you see a lot of podcasts like feature directors and, you know, people who are super fans of a topic. I mean, they can kind of indulge in a podcast or indulge on a forum.
But why doesn't a company like Netflix, if you loved Manhunter, mm-hmm. right? Imagine if they did Manhunter and they had the actual profilers, you know, featured in that. Did you see that series Manhunter about serial killers?
No, sadly.
Oh my God, it's so good. It's amazing. Just watch Manhunter. It's fantastic. It's one of the
That'll be my homework.
Or, you know, like Yeah, exactly. Anyway, it's just if you like serial killers, who doesn't? But imagine you had the actual profilers who caught those serial killers or experts on it, you know, doing it. You could watch it again with them talking, you know, under it. And they don't do that anymore. And they could just basically say, here is, you know, commentary on it. They do like things like Talking mm-hmm. Dead or whatever. I guess AMC does shows after the show.
There you go.
I used to love those.
Netflix, if you're listening, listen to Jason. He has a few notes for you, free of charge.
It's just a note.
But basically, what we were going to talk about was that Uber will manage Marin County's on-demand public transportation service. So the Transportation Authority of Marin will pay Uber a subscription fee to use the company's transportation management software. The software is going to facilitate,
fantastic,
match, and track Marin County's vehicle fleet. And we'll start with one service that runs along Highway 101 in California. So a reporter for TechCrunch said, this deal is more notable than its small size might make it seem. Expect more SaaS from Uber. So my question to you, Jason, is what do you think of this move for Uber? Do you see it as a panic button, or was this kind of the long-term plan all along?
It was always a long-term plan. You know, Travis's original vision was that they were a logistics company and that any other platform could be part of the end-to-end delivery of people or goods, mm-hmm. anything that has to move from point A to point B. So he always had bikes and scooters and aeroplanes and helicopters. Everything was on the table in terms of moving stuff around. And if you just think about how stressed our local governments are, mm-hmm. and how horrific they are at innovating because they don't have a profit incentive. They have unions and high cost and high turnover, i.e., you know, person's the mayor for 2-4 years, person's the city planner for X number of years. We really want the government doing less, and we want private industry taking those things over. So if there was a healthy ecosystem and Lyft and Uber and other companies had to fight to provide bus service, you would have lower costs and better consumer experience. Right. And if you look universally at all public transportation across the United States, the last thing anybody would say is, wow, things are really improving at a high velocity for the New York City subway, or BART is just absolutely delightful. These things are collapsing, they're decrepit, and they're breaking down, and they're disappointing to consumers.
So why do you?
And so I know people hate capitalism, but you know, we should be embracing it because things that capitalists make are really good.
Things
and competition is really good. We just sat here talking about the why, you know,
Frosted Flakes, capitalism.
Well, you know, Frosted Flakes is up against Captain Crunch, and Captain Crunch is up against Fruit Loops, and they're going to be on their game. You know, Captain Crunch, peanut butter Captain Crunch.
What's your top cereal rankings? Top three. Let's go.
Well, I've always been a Captain Crunch guy just from day one.
That's number one.
And then I'll for sure, hands down.
Original
Captain
Crunch. We're not talking peanut butter.
Just originally. I'm not messing with peanut butter or whatever. I do love the peanut butter, but I'm just going to go classic. And then I like Frosted Flakes.
All right. Well, what I was going to ask you is, why do you?
What about you? You can't skip over that.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch, man.
Reese's
Puffs.
Good choice. That's a good
pull. And I'm going to go with you.
You're an animal. The Reese's Puff. That's an animal.
That's not
I can't
even
do
cereal.
It.
That's
savage.
That's candy. Like the fact that that's being
you know
marketed
what?
As cereal.
Cookie Crisp.
Oh man, that's good stuff.
Yeah,
too.
No. You're eating cookies, okay? You're eating candy for breakfast. You're putting. You might as well just take two Reese's peanut butter cups, throw them in a bowl, and pour
Isn't
a glass of milk over it.
Isn't that what they sell it as?
No, that's gross.
Like, this is like Reese's in a cereal or something like that. There used to be a commercial. But what I was going to ask you, back to the topic, is why do you think Uber waited so long to sell their tech? Do you think there's any apprehension that, you know, by providing a service like this, they were going to be cannibalizing their own rides?
No, it's just like there's things on the roadmap that take years to deploy. And this is probably something that's 2-3 years in the making. And they want to play nice with cities. And I think this is not the first time a city has engaged Uber or Lyft. Remember the story of there were some bus routes where there was costing them $15-$20 per passenger?
Yes, yes.
And they just decided, we'll just give everybody a $5 credit if they're leaving from that zone and they would have taken the bus to another mm-hmm. zone. We'll just make it free for the people who live there and use Lyft or something. I think actually Lyft is the one that won that deal, if my memory serves me correct.
So, yeah.
That's what all cities should do. All cities should look and say, which of these routes are costing us too much money? And if you take the, if the route costs $1 million and it gets 1 million rides, it's $1 a ride. Well, if the route's $1 million and it's getting 10,000 rides, it's $100 a ride. Mm-hmm. Well, you need to deprecate that route and then just say anybody who lives there gets a $10 coupon in the, or anybody who opens the app in that area can then go take a ride, right? Or they can take one ride a day, right? Or two rides a day. And if you want to take more rides than that, boom, and the city would save money, yeah. Right?
I mean, I think it's nice that Uber's flexing their software muscle. And I think Lyft's going to follow, obviously, because that's just both companies.
Sure.
Why not? Airbnb is going to do the same. Maybe help independent hotels and lodges with their operations management. But overall, from what I've heard, most transportation software is very dated and not modernized, and it'll be interesting to see what we see in the future. And by the way, just a quick note, if anyone's interested, Nick, our producer's top three cereals, Cocoa Puffs, Honey Smacks, and Frosted Flakes. There you go.
Okay, wow, there's a lot of overlap in the Frosted Flakes. I think everybody likes a good Frosted Flakes once in a while. Yeah. But yeah, the thing, I'll tell you this, the most important thing is really you got to keep the ice cold milk and they got to keep the cereal on the table in front of you. You pour a third of a bowl of cereal, a third of the milk, you eat that. Then you top it off with a little more crispy cereal. These people who, I know some people pour a bowl of cereal, they pour the milk in, then they go away for 10 minutes so it gets soggy. Mm-hmm. That is not the point of cereal. The point of cereal is to have the ice cold milk and the crispy cereal.
Man.
I'm just leaving it at that.
Well, thank you, Rachel Ray. We'll make sure to submit that recipe page onto foodnetwork.com. Moving on to our next topic here on the docket. United said it may ban passengers that don't wear face masks from boarding planes.
Wait, they're not banning it already?
Apparently not. Give me a break. But the big problem here is that the Department of Transportation, for whatever reason, has opposed imposing federal guidelines for airlines, suggesting that companies roll out their own health and safety policies. In an interview with Axios, Delta CEO Ed Bastian said the airline would not forcibly remove passengers off a plane if a passenger did not wear a mask, but federal legislation would allow the airline to enforce these rules. Just for some background, six major airlines, including Delta and Southwest, have committed to creating guidelines for passengers who refuse to comply with the policies. Passengers are required to wear face coverings during the entirety of the flight, except when flyers are drinking or eating. Jason, is it time to create federal legislation on mask wearing on airplanes?
100%. The fact that we don't,
the administration is ridiculous. Apprehensive about this because it's plain old stupid.
Because
at this point,
this is just politics. You know, the for some reason America is so divided right now that we've taken something as simple as consensus health as a consensus health edict, and we've made it political. The left wants to shelter in place and wear masks and lock everybody down. The right wants to go to a Trump rally with 1 million people.
6,000.
You cut off my joke. 994,000 TikTokers laughing and 46,000 showing up in person. I just signed up for the Arizona event myself. I'm sure I'm going
to
be there.
Do you need me to send you a MAGA hat?
Please, absolutely. But it's so stupid. I mean, this is the easiest no-brainer. You're in a locked, confined space for 1 to 6 hours. Wear your mask. And don't make us land the plane because you won't wear your mask or you won't comply. Don't be that person. And if you are that person, you should be arrested and put in jail for 30 days and get a you should have to pay for the extra jet fuel to land the plane. That's actually the ultimate. If you made people who, and I don't mean to be an authoritarian here, but my feeling on this is, you have to respect other people, and this is about respecting other people, not yourself. If you didn't want to do it and you don't choose to wear it in your home, in your backyard, that's fine. But if you're on a plane, come on, wear your mask.
Yeah, they actually...
It's just ridiculous. And then some other airlines, by the way, it's required. So I don't understand why United is making a big deal out of they're going to make this mandatory because... Delta said they would not forcibly remove somebody. Mm-hmm. because they need federal regulation. But I think Delta said you have to wear one. So
yeah, pretty much every airline's agreed that
every airline
that passengers have to wear them. But I guess it comes down to how it's being enforced, right? Because United's basically saying, okay, the way we're going to enforce this is that if you do not wear your mask during the flight, we're not going to say anything. We're not going to do anything. You're going to stay on the flight. But once you're off, we're going to ban you for life if that's what it takes, right?
I love that.
And so that's the policy.
I love a ban for life. That's great. I mean, that is a severe, that might be for some people a worse punishment than paying the $10,000 in jet fuel to land the plane and make it come back
especially
up, right?
For a freaking flyer.
what I was just thinking, like if you're the jackass. Oh, that's a good one too. But no, banning somebody for life, because you could just go up to him and say, listen, Jason Calacanis in seat 34B, we're calling down to the home office and you will never for the rest of your life be able to take United again.
And you'll never be able to take Spirit Airlines again. I'm sorry, Jason.
Are you going to fly in 2020?
What's I think I told you. I will. I'm committed to it. It's going to happen. And if it doesn't happen in the next 5 months.
What are you going to wear? You're going to wear one mask,
eye
protection?
Suit, full shield.
Are you joking?
Yes, I'm joking. Yeah.
You're joking.
No. But I probably will wear a face shield. I have a face shield, mask. But other than that, let's see if I survive. We'll have to see what happens.
Well, why don't we have statistics on this? Why don't we have tracking and tracing yet? Like, shouldn't everybody who's been on a plane, we know, are they checking everybody's temperature before you get on a plane? I don't know why we're not doing the quick blood testing and the checking of temperatures.
I think in some airports, so it's also an airport to airport legislation. I think, if I recall correctly, I think today at LAX, the mayor of Los Angeles, Eric Garcetti, actually did a little speech or something there saying that LAX would be an airport where you'd get checked medically before a flight. But it's
perfect.
Not going to be this administration's not going to make it a federal thing. They're not going to do federal screenings. And
this is the problem we talked about with self-driving is that we have a union of 50 states and a bunch of cities inside of them. And everybody gets to make their own goddamn decision. Because we don't have strong federal leadership. If we had Bush or Obama or Clinton or Reagan, whoever in office, they would be universal consensus. They'd be like, this is how it's going down. And they would leave it up to states to, fight them, right? They'd say, you can try and fight us, but we're putting this federal mandate out. And as opposed to now where it's just like, yeah, let the states figure it out.
We'll see what happens. Anyway, wrapping things up here on Inside Transportation. Dope or nope? This is a quick one. I know that, I don't know if you're a huge pickup truck fan, but Mazda recently showed off its BT50 pickup truck, which is going to be released in Australia. But the automaker is listening to whether it would make they're listening to consumers on whether they would make the vehicle available in the US. So Jason, as the voice of the American, what do you think of this Mazda pickup truck, the BT 50, which I will drop in the show notes, by the way, so you guys at home can see it as well. But what do you think of this vehicle styling? Do you think we need another pickup truck in the market? What's your take?
All right. I'm looking at it right now. And I don't know if Mazda's ever made a pickup truck before, but if you were to change the logo on this and put any other car manufacturer's logo on it, I wouldn't be able to tell you this is uniquely a Mazda. And so it looks awfully generic. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the price is and any of the features that are unique. But what I will say is in the age of the Cybertruck and what is it, Rivian?
Rivian, yes. That amazing looking
Rivian
pickup truck that looks like it's from the future.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the Cybertruck, actually.
When you look at those two trucks and then you look at something as silly and pedestrian as this truck, I mean, this truck looks like it could have been made in 1988, 1998, 2008. Like, this is why car companies are screwed, because they're all making phones like they're AT&T and Bell Labs in the 70s, and every phone looks exactly the same. And then all of a sudden the StarTAC comes out and the Nokia comes out and the Sidekick comes out. Like, they're just lost. These things look generic and milquetoast and boring.
And it's kind of disappointing because Mazda so this usually has like pretty good styling, like very aggressive styling, and just kind of seems
anyway. It's
like
a hard nope for me.
Same here. Same
nope.
Here. MSRP.
What do you think?
Nom a nope. MSRP is expected to be around 42K.
I mean, you could buy a used pickup truck for half that. Mm-hmm. That would probably be better looking or just as good. So I just don't get this.
I did see one note, just to kind of wrap things up here. I did see one note this week saying that the Ford F-150 pickup truck, the new one that's coming out, mm-hmm. they're actually going to show it off in July, I believe. But it's going to have a lie-flat passenger seat so you can take a nap. Dope or nope? I'm going to say dope.
I'm going to have to say dope, yeah. I mean, don't do that while you're driving. Like, you know that guy who drives with the seat as far back as possible?
Yeah, I don't get that guy.
I don't understand that guy. Like, what is that guy really doing? Is he like, he's a two-finger steering wheel guy. Like, he's at 6 o'clock on the steering wheel, maybe 5:30, best case. And he's two-finger guy, and he's leaned all the way back guy. And he's always got a hat mm-hmm. on. Mm-hmm. Music's blaring. Mm-hmm. And he's probably got two fingers on the steering wheel, and then he's probably got a Marlboro light out the side. Who is that guy?
That's me, Jason.
And why is he sitting that?
I'm kidding.
No, it's not. But why is he trying to make his eye line 1 inch above the dashboard? Is there some optimization here for relaxation that I'm missing? Because that does not seem relaxing to me.
Maybe
that
you should try it and report back on the next podcast.
I have tried that. I tried it when I was a kid. There was nothing. Maybe somebody in the audience is that guy, the lean back guy, or the two-finger driving guy. Like, put your hands at 10 and 2, or at least one at 10, and elbow on the... You know,
if you are that guy, please email johan@inside.com. That's a wrap for our podcast today. Thank you so much, Jason, for joining us. And we'll see you all next week. Take care.